This is Tansy Rainer Roberts for Galactic Chat, and I'm here interviewing Glenda Lark at SwanCon. Glenda, how have you been enjoying the convention?
It's been wonderful. I really always love SwanCon. It was my first con in 2003. Never been to a con before. Walked in the front door, didn't know anybody, knew nothing about cons, and they were so welcoming, and, you know, I'll take every chance I can to get back to SwanCon.
How many do you think, is this a horrible question, but how many do you think you've actually been to?
This is the third SwanCon.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've had two World Cons in that time as well.
So you're a West Australian, you were born here, is that right?
I was born here, yeah, in Kelmscott.
Wonderful.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, and now you live in Malaysia.
In Malaysia, yes.
But you've said, you're planning to come back someday? Is that the plan?
Not just someday, next year.
Next year?
Absolutely, yes. My husband's retiring and I'm saying, you know, I've been in Malaysia long enough, now it's your turn.
Absolutely. So you're coming back to Australia, to Perth?
To live, yes.
To live?
To live.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. With your most recent series, particularly the... I don't want to get this wrong. It's the Water Givers.
The Water Givers in Australia. It's actually not called that in US and UK.
Oh, it isn't.
It's just called the Stormlord Trilogy.
Interesting. Was there a reason?
Don't ask me why. No idea.
It was their preferences.
It was their decision, yeah.
Because it's one of the things I noticed, particularly about the trilogy, is it's pretty obvious. The landscape is just so, different to what we think of as traditional fantasy. The desert base and the dryness and the lack of water. And is there a particular place that inspired that? Is it, or is it just...
Well, it comes right from my childhood when my whole family was sort of into having holidays in the outback and that kind of thing. So, yeah, the desert's never been a foreign place to me. It's been something I grew up with. We lived on a farm and water was very important. But it's not really entirely the Australian desert either.
No, it's
because I lived in Tunisia, on virtually the edge of the Sahara.
Wow.
And so it's got a bit of that in it. We went into Algeria, into the middle of the Sahara, and there's a little bit of that in it. And then I got more ideas from flying over Iran, some of the dry areas in Iran. So those ideas of water coming down the dry water course into the village, that's actually from Iran and Algeria.
There was such powerful imageries and like everybody running to try and get the water and trap the water. Pouring down the cliff face.
And that's real even to this day.
Wow.
In Iran, they have it underground. In Algeria, it's actually down the dry water course and through these little gaps in the walls and into the house. Mm. So I'm a terrible cheat. You know, everybody thinks, oh, what great ideas you have. In actual fact, I just travel a lot.
Well, I don't know if it's cheating. I think that's technically what they call research.
But okay, I think, research.
Do you find yourself being drawn to, I suppose, areas, places, in your writing, which are different to what people might normally expect? I mean, are you always deliberately looking for something, I don't know, I suppose, just to stand out, something different, or is it just what appeals to you?
That's a hard question, actually. Every book starts with a single idea, and then I sort of go from there, and it gradually gets wider and wider and wider until it includes everything. And a lot of it comes from having lived and travelled in different places. Mm-hmm. And I'm an environmentalist. I'm very attuned to environmental problems and how an environment or a habitat fits together, what can go wrong with a habitat. So I hope that sort of comes across in my world building without being dominant.
Well, I think world building is just such an important aspect of fantasy, but there is always the danger, isn't there, that people just look at the world building and not everything else, but it's part of the whole.
It has to be a background against which the story plays out. Yeah. And they, you know, it's sort of integrated, but you don't want the background to be dominating.
Well, what comes first for you when you're writing, or is it always different? Like, do you construct the world first and then make the people who live there, or...?
It usually starts with a very silly idea, you know, a simple little idea, like, I don't know, with Havenstart was maps that move. according to what's happening on the ground. That was in the days before GPS or J.K. Rowling's. And that sort of gives an idea, well, what kind of land would be important if you had that you need moving maps. So it would be a land that was very unstable. So that, you know, that's another idea, and then that leads to another idea, who would be important, a map maker. So, okay, there I've got the main character, map maker's daughter.
So what was it with the Water Givers or the Stormblood trilogy? What was the starting point?
I think the starting point actually probably came from flying in an aeroplane at 33,000 feet over Iran and looking down and seeing these tiny little villages with holes in the landscape going out like sort of in a star pattern from the village. In actual fact, it wasn't going from the village, it was going into the village. And they were these maintenance shafts for underground water tunnels. And these tunnels, you know, I went back and did some research to find out about them, and they're 2,000 years old, and they're still in operation.
Wow.
And they're still bringing water to the villages. And I thought, oh, how cool is that? And so I thought, okay, what if you were a boy living in a village like that? And, you know, so it sort of gradually built up from that. And one thing leads to another, and one idea leads to another, and in the end you've got a whole storyline and three books in a trilogy.
Hmm. Well, you say in the end, but you were saying, I think, on one of our earlier panels, you were saying this book is one that started like 10 years ago, was it? It's a long time ago.
A long time ago, yes. Yeah. Because I was, when I first started writing, I couldn't get published, or not immediately, and I was reluctant to write a whole trilogy and find I'd wasted 3 years, but unable to publish something that I'd been working on for 3 years. So I wrote the first book, sent it to my agent, and then started writing the first book of another trilogy, and then the first book of another. And in between, I got one book published, which was Havenstar. So in, I think it was about the year 2000, I started writing the first book of The Water Givers. But in 2002, I sold the first book of the Isles of Glory. So then I had to write book two and three. And then the next one was actually The Mirage Makers. And then I had to write books two and three of that. So I didn't get round to book two of the Water Givers until just a couple of years ago.
Well, how was it coming back to it after so long? Did you feel like
it was great?
It was a challenge, or it was just
it was
nice
great
to come
because
back?
Because it was, I'd put it aside for so long that when I picked up book one again, I thought, oh yeah, I can improve on that. And now I've got more ideas and more experience, and yeah, it's a better book. Mm. It's a much better book than it was in 2000.
And the thing, I suppose, as writers, we can't always afford the luxury of having a manuscript sit for 10 years to, like, quietly cook.
No, and I wish we could, but, you know, yeah, we have to earn something somewhere along the line.
Absolutely. something that I notice in your work particularly is the gender issues. And, you know, there's a particular interest of mine,
yes,
the gender issues.
Yes, good.
And we've talked about it before. In the last Stormlord, the first book, I was looking for the female characters to sort of see what you did, and you had a really wide variety of female characters and different kinds of strengths, and the way that women were treated in the society, in all these different levels. Because it's a very leveled society.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got these,
yeah.
So many very specific types of level to the city, like literally, yeah. Like, there are the people in 36 or the people in the
yeah. And it all depends on water. Mm. So if you're at the bottom of the heap, you're not entitled to any water at all.
Yes.
You really have to earn or steal or somehow get it. But if you're at the top, you know, you've got unlimited water.
Another thing, I found it really interesting that you had a society which was in some ways so very oppressive to women, and in other ways there were these freedoms, I suppose, that you wouldn't, that I wouldn't necessarily have expected to see it in the same place. So I really enjoyed seeing that way that, you had a more complex, I suppose it was that the richer women had different kinds of, like, freedoms but also constraints.
Well, I think the richer, well-born women have always, that's exactly it. They have a lot more freedoms, but they also have more constraints because they belong to rich families who expect certain things. You know? And I think, too, in that world, you could actually be very powerful if you had power over water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a magical power in the book, so, or can be a magical power. So if you're a woman, you've got loads of power.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you have that magical power.
But oh, it always, I thought it was interesting, you sort of set up one which, yes, those powerful women had all this extra, almost male freedoms, but at the same time, as soon as somebody needed babies from them, it's like, well,
you don't have any choices. Because the water power was inherited, yes. Mm, so, absolutely. Yeah, you don't have much choice.
The magical sister, I love the magical sister in this book. The water painting, that system just really, I just love the idea of creating, and I'm not entirely sure I have my head completely wrapped around it, because I'm still only halfway through, like, book two this series, but how did it come up with this idea of the technique of the painting and shuffling up? And,
yeah, well, you know, I'm sort of embarrassed to say. I'd love to say it just came, you know, one morning. Yes. I woke up and it was in my head. In actual fact, it came from watching a TV program on some Indian water painters. They actually paint on water.
Wow.
And it was fascinating.
I thought it was something you've made up.
Yes, I shouldn't give these secrets away.
No, it's marvellous.
They have this tray of water, and they have powder in very bright colours, you know, Indian yellows and pinks and greens and things. And they're very, very skillful, and they use a little spoon, and they build a picture. Maybe, usually, something might be Ganesh, or it could be a scene or whatever. And actually, I'm not quite sure how... I mean, normally if you put powder on water, it spreads all over the place and you end up with a mess.
Yes, there must
be somehow,
some kind of...
I don't know how they do it or what their ingredients are. But they do these beautiful, detailed paintings on the surface of water. So I thought, wouldn't that be cool if you could actually sort of roll it up and take it home and stick it on the wall if you wanted, take it off the wall. So, they can do that because they use resins in my story.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a magic involved as well.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But, no, I liked the focus on art. And, again, because one of your characters, she starts out in a really dreadful situation in which her only option when she reaches puberty is to become a prostitute, to join her sister and all that. And she doesn't want that, even though it actually is a reasonably privileged lifestyle for somebody at her level.
Yeah.
She wants to escape that, and it's the arts that she uses to escape through. Mm. It's sort of interesting. I suppose artists, especially in our community, are often treated in the way that magicians are in fantasy, and they get that extra elite status a lot of the time.
Mm. Yeah, and that was. And I also played with that a bit because I sort of led people down the garden path. You think that she's going to have a certain skill as a dancer, and of course that she doesn't. It doesn't work out. And it's then a purely you think it's an accidental meeting. It's not really, as you find out later on. And she becomes a water painter, and she has this skill.
Yeah.
And she's actually trapped.
Even
though she doesn't know it at first. She's in a worse trap. She's trapped in a future that she had no say in, and it's done by magic. And it's really, I mean, it's the most horrible trap you can think of. Somebody has... used you, and put you in a future that you didn't decide.
Yes, the taking away of free will.
Yes, taking away free will entirely, and it's kind of worse because it's a long time before she even realizes what's been done to her.
Yeah, no, it's...
And she spends the rest of the trilogy trying to get out from under that. Mm. It takes her a long while.
I can't wait to see how it finishes up. Now, you've finished the third book, haven't you? It's not out for a while, but it's... When's the third one out?
August 1st, worldwide.
Okay. So that trilogy is done from your point of view?
Yes.
So what are you working on now?
I'm working on something which I haven't sold yet, and it's another trilogy, and it's... something that I have already started and I'm just loving it. I've got to the stage where I was sort of getting a little bit sick of the Stormlord story after three books. I wanted to be doing something new, so I leave that world and start another one entirely. And this is it's not set in our Earth history, but it's, let's say if it was, it would be 1600 Europe, Dutch versus British trading interests, going to the Spice Islands of Indonesia and fighting it out there. So there are buccaneers and pirates, there's magic, there's birds of paradise, there's spices, there's traders in Europe, and royalty sort of at loggerheads, one the Dutch and the English. And yeah, it's great fun. I just love it.
It sounds really good. all right, well, I think we will leave that there for now, but thank you for talking to me.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Yeah. And now we can go and enjoy the rest of the convention.
Yes, yes, and I'm really having a ball.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, that's great.